Good morning, everyone. My name is Javed Sayed. I work at the Treatment Action Group in New York. Me and Eleonora will moderate or just facilitate the process today. The reason why I'm up here is because we do some. I'm the director of the TB-HIV project at the Treatment Action Group, and part of our work is to build a community movement to increase BWA networks to get more involved in TB work, especially in high-burden countries. So part of that work has entailed engaging activists who are already doing a lot of AIDS advocacy and treatment activism to increase their awareness of how TB-HIV works together, because though people live the experience of two diseases, one patient, because the silos of TB-HIV are so vertical, even after we've experienced those diseases in our own body, we don't sometimes understand what the interaction is. So that's me.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Eleonora Jimenez, and I coordinate the TB-HIV Monitoring and Advocacy Project for Public Health Watch, which is a program of the Open Society Institute in New York. And for the last 3 years, Public Health Watch has been supporting and funding TB-HIV activism and advocacy both at the national and global level. And we welcome you today to hear five speakers, five phenomenal activists who have engaged in TB-HIV advocacy at the local, regional, and global level. And they're here to share with you their strategies, their approaches, and most importantly, their recommendations for the future for TB-HIV advocates. I also want to mention that we are going to have an interactive session this morning. We welcome your participation and your questions. And we'd also like to ask everyone that when they do have a question, to please come up to the mic so that we can be able to hear your questions and your comments. So with that, I'll introduce our speakers.
I just do like a little bit of the framing up.
Yes, sure. Okay.
So one of the things that we learned from our experience last year, because last year was the first year that we organized a panel of activists who were doing TB-HIV and just TB advocacy, was that we wanted to give people a lot more, and how does it link to the sort of theme of this year, which is healthcare resource strengthening, was that we wanted to really highlight the ways in which community activists on different levels of engagement can really contribute to policy formulation as well as implementation, both on a, you know, on a global level as well as on a national level. And as the TB movement for community engagement is still somewhat in its inception phase, how can these different actors play a role, along with, of course, the NTP managers, the other policymakers and funders, to ensure that community voices are in it and that the policies and programs that are formulated actually reflect the community's priorities. So as you will hear from the different activists, their experiences are quite different. Some of them have engaged in the Stop TB partnership and have utilized that as a way of engaging further on a national level. And then some of them have been straightforward PWA activists who have, because of the strengthened advocacy networks that the HIV/AIDS world has created, used that as an early warning signal system for you know, TB programs, to monitor TB programs. So I hope that you will be able to get a sense of the ways in which activists on all different levels can participate in this dialogue. The other thing that we learned from last year was that we spent a lot of time describing why OSI and TAG was doing this work, and we didn't have enough time to have people talk to each other. So the way we've structured this session today is that we're just going to have the speakers give a really brief 5-minute description of what they're doing, and then we're just going to open it up for question and answers, both from each other as well as from the audience. And so we're hoping for this to be really interactive. So if you don't want to use the microphone and just have it be a much more, you know, interactive process, you might have to move front a little bit so that we can hear your questions clearly. So with that, we'll just turn it over and go ahead and introduce the first speaker.
Hi,
Our first speaker is Samuel Grigorian from the Armenian National AIDS Foundation. Our next speaker is Tamara Gvaramadz from Georgian Plus Group. We have Carlos Garcia de Leon from Ave de Mexico. We have Lillian Moreco from TASO. And we have Pervez Tufail from the National Program of TB People.
You could start.
Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, TB HIV activists, community activists. Let me introduce myself. I am Dr. Samuel Grigorian, and I am representing Armenian National AIDS Foundation, one of the major and famous NGOs in Armenia, which has implemented TB-HIV advocacy project in 2005-2006. The project was launched in 2005 with the aim to develop a multi-stakeholder response to TB-HIV co-infection in Armenia, targeting institutions like country coordination mechanism on HIV/AIDS and TB issues as one agreed national coordinating authority in the country, medical institutions, non-governmental organizations, communities affected by TB/HIV were advocated for better communication and information exchange between TB and HIV national programs. Project activities included organizing awareness-raising workshops, disseminating advocacy materials among policymakers, physicians, affected communities, organizing roundtables to initiate dialogue among representatives from HIV and TB programs, CCM, medical institutions, NGOs, affected communities. The results of the projects briefly were adoption by the CCM members of the resolution to form a CCM working groups responsible for coordination of HIV, AIDS, and TB national programs. The workshop for NGOs representatives resulted in increased communication and cooperation among representatives and organizations who represent TB-HIV activists. The workshop for physicians succeeded in providing recommendations to enhance comprehensive healthcare services to people co-infected with TB and HIV. The workshop, the recommendation of the roundtable discussions was made for better inter-program cooperation between HIV AIDS and TB national programs. I would like to mention also some concrete and visible outcomes of our projects. So after TB-HIV advocacy activities implementation by our organization, referral system and surveillance for HIV among TB patients and TB among HIV patients was improved in the country. Special referral forms were developed in the country, and more HIV patients were tested for TB with further comprehensive healthcare services provision if needed, and more TB patients were tested for HIV in the country with further comprehensive services provision. So for all patients in Armenia, currently for all HIV patients, TB treatment DOTS implementation is available widely free of charge. And for all TB HIV co-infected patients, ARV treatment is available free of charge treatment countrywide. Of course, we should mention that these activities are widely supported by different international organizations and donor organizations. especially Global Fund to fight TB, HIV, and malaria, KfW, GTZ, some other organizations, WHO is a technical partner organization. And at the conclusion, I would like to mention that when given appropriate support and information, key stakeholders demonstrate a commitment to address TB, HIV collaboratively. This also requires the continued engagement of TB, HIV advocates, including communities most affected by TB and HIV. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. I'm going to present Georgian Plus Group and its work in the frames of two TB-HIV projects funded by OSI. I'll give you a brief overview of the TB-HIV situation in the country, then shortly short information about the Georgian Plus Group itself, and then I'll talk about our projects. As regards to HIV/AIDS, Georgia is, has low prevalence, but it is considered to be having a high potential risk for development of epidemic. Since 2004, September 2004, under the Global Fund, everyone who needs IRVs and gets them for free in Georgia, and this is a great achievement to which Georgian Plus Group has a significant contribution. As regards to TB, Georgia is considered one of the high burden TB countries in Europe. We, due to the decline in the social and economic conditions of the entire population and deterioration of prophylactic and treatment components of public health service, the TB is spreading at a threatening rate. Also, the MDR-TB and TB-HIV co-infection are declared the major challenges in finding TB in Georgia, as well as in the world. Currently, TB-HIV component of GFATM project in Georgia is small and undeveloped, but we're hoping that it will get more attention in future. As regards to Georgian Plus Group, it is the first self-help group of PWAs in Georgia. It has, as its main goal, it has improving the quality of life of people living with HIV/AIDS. When Georgian Plus Group started its activities, there were not only no community activity in the field of HIV/AIDS, no community representation in any of the decision-making bodies, today, where is it? I'm sorry. Today, after almost 4 years of its existence, IRVs are available for everyone for free. A methadone program is available for every eligible person. There are two self-help groups of PWAs in Georgia. The community representative is on the CCM, and TB-HIV joint body has been organized and met two times and had has a community representative on it. And G+G has earned authority so that we have a voice. And our members very often give interviews, and we have close connections to media, and we have some sources and activities aims to raising awareness of general public in Georgia, which is very important component of all our projects. As regards to our projects, of our TB HIV projects, the first one, they were conducted over 2005 and 2006. The first one was preventing the spread of TB among HIV positive community of Georgia, and the second one was decreasing the risk of TB spread among South Caucasus HIV plus community.
To address?
Oh. 2 minutes. In the frames of these projects, we identified targets as targets to be of two types, the providers and receivers of the services. And we developed activities aimed to both of those targets. And we also used a network of other NGOs, HIV AIDS service providing NGOs, and TB service providing organizations, and other civil society organizations to implement the activities that were outlined in our project. And also we reached out of the borders of Georgia to the South Caucasus region, because it is a very specific small region, and the countries, Georgia, Armenia, and Azerbaijan, that are situated there, have a long time historical and cultural relationships that make it easy to develop joint strategies and joint activities. That is very short. I didn't fit in 5 minutes, but I hope I'll have some more time to go into details. Thank you.
Continue. Okay, it's my turn. I'm Carlos Garcia de Leon. I'm from Mexico, from an NGO named Ave de Mexico. We have 16 years working on the HIV/AIDS field. But when we began this project, we were blind about the TB related with HIV/AIDS situation. That was something that was just in front of us or sometimes inside of our bodies, but we cannot look at that. So this project was a very good opportunity to begin to increase the personal awareness of the people of my organization and, of course, with others. The project is not only working in the national level in Mexico, it's trying to work in the regional level in all Latin America. So we began at making a meeting in the context of a treatment action forum that was held in Mexico in last November in Oaxaca, Mexico. And we have some international and regional participants from 5 of the most leading networks in Latin America region. One that is working in human rights, of course related with HIV/AIDS. The other one is from the people living with HIV/AIDS. Other from the sex workers. And one about a treatment, and of course the woman living with HIV/AIDS of our region. And we have 3 of the most important networks of the national level, and of course activists and policymakers and medical workers. It was so impressive how we began to work, because in that meeting it was like similar than when AIDS epidemic begins. There was a lot of questions, of basic questions about TB and HIV/AIDS co-infection, about symptoms, because as I told you, we were blind about this situation, and it begins to increase awareness. So we have more than 143 participants in this meeting, and that begins our work. The interesting thing of our project is how we began in the national level to make some kind of partnerships that allows us to influence the policy development and, of course, the policy implementation. National TB and the National AIDS Program, we began to have some kind of different partnership. Of course, we have a long relationship with the National AIDS Program. We were close. We know each other. Sometimes we have a lot of fights, but it's common in the AIDS work. and in the AIDS world. But we have never been closely with the national TB program. And it was, we find a lot of political will, a lot of sensitivity. So now we have more than 1 year working together and interchanging experiences and sharing many of our commitments. So what happened after that meeting? We began to work, I'm going to repeat about the national level, we began to work together, increasing the number of people living with HIV/AIDS that are working in this project, in this program, in this movement, because it was so interesting. There were a lot of gaps of knowledge in us about the TB issues, and there were a lot of gaps in them about the HIV/AIDS situation, particularly in the social situations like stigma, discrimination, and many others. So now we're co-participating in designing, for example, courses for nurses that we are having in nationwide. And as I told you, because we find a lot of sensitivity in the national TB program, we can now work together really closely. So we're happy of that. But we find a lot of resistance in the states' AIDS programs about the TB issues. So we are exactly in that process, trying to move on the agenda with them. And we finally create some kind of a group, working group, that came from the Stop TB partnership from Mexico City that is working and dealing with those issues. There are a lot of political issues about, I'm not speaking about the NGOs working on these issues, about leadership and about commitment. And we have to solve that situations to reinforce the work that we're trying to do. In the regional level, we have a lot of awareness about the TB and AIDS situation and how they correlate it. And they promise us to include the co-infection in the advocacy agendas. But it's so difficult because we find that there's a lot of resistance to put something extra in the agenda, even though there's not a specific resources, there's not some kind of motivation. So we have to go on and to try to improve the way that we're working with the regional networks, because of course they say we have enough with our work with the sex workers, we have enough work with the human rights situation. So we were thinking at the beginning that making advocacy strategies will be so easy and helpful just to add the confection issue in their agendas. But it's not the same thing that it's happening in a national level. And we noticed that we need more face-to-face meeting to work on that. Finally, what I want to say is that now we have a better influence than when we began to work with the national TB program and the national AIDS program to influence how policies are created and developed. And I think that we are just in the first steps to work really much better and to have the influence of the activists and people living with the HIV/AIDS in those programs. Thank you.
Thanks, Carlos.
Morning, everybody. My name is Lilian Moreko. I'm standing in for Dr. Lydia Mungerera, and I'll be sharing the TASO experience from Uganda. The TASO experience regarding TB/HIV and our involvement is a partnership of non-government organizations, community-based organizations, and networks of people living with HIV and AIDS in Uganda. And this came out as a result of the tickling that we had from the international community regarding the dangers of TB, and more especially to the community of people living with HIV and AIDS. And again, as activists who have been involved in HIV and AIDS work, we realized that we could not sit back and wait when we knew that this was an issue of death and life, and especially to people who are living with HIV and AIDS. And therefore, recognizing that we were talking about two diseases in one patient, it was inevitable that we have this partnership. And again, one of the issues that we considered so important was that for us to do work in TB, we needed to begin with policy. We realized that it is at policy level where decisions are made regarding collaboration, regarding integration of services, and also the activities that need to be carried out in relation to TB and HIV. And therefore, we felt that we needed to begin with policy and decision makers. And therefore, our experience is that we've been more engaged with the national TB programs to ensure that there are favorable policies in place, to ensure that there is a very good working relationship between the communities and program managers to make sure that we scale up the response against TB. Now, in this partnership, what have we done? This is something that started in 2004, and so far what has happened is that as the communities living with the diseases, we have been involved in developing policies. And as I speak right now, we have a TB-HIV policy in Uganda, and this was developed in partnership and in consultation with the communities. As the communities, we've carried out advocacy trainings. We've so far had six trainings in advocacy because we believe that for us to engage with the program managers, to engage with people who make policies, we have to have skills in negotiation, we have to have skills in advocacy, but we also have to have skills in public relations. So that's why we've come up with these trainings. We've participated in the Stop TB conference that happened in our country in 2004. And as we speak now, we have representation on the National Country Coordinating Mechanism. We have two people who are representing the communities. And we've also had a communications strategy for TB-HIV developed because we believe that people need to know what we mean by TB-HIV, and this was developed with our participation. And in this partnership, we realize that people don't have information about TB and HIV, especially information that is targeted to the specific people and in a simple language. So we've so far developed 1,250 brochures, giving the situation of TB and HIV in our country, but also encouraging, especially women who are carrying the burden of TB and HIV, to get involved in this kind of work. And last year, again, as TB-HIV activists, we got to know that there was a drug stuck out for TB, and we alerted the international community because we realized that if we alerted the international community, they would get to us and support us in, you know, dealing with the country situation. And in this way, the international community got to know what was happening. They joined us, and later on, we had the situation addressed. But if we hadn't raised this issue, probably it was not going to be addressed. So there's a lot that we are doing, as we shall interact later. But one of the key messages that we'd like to leave with you is that we've learned that existing structures are very, very important in dealing with TB. And this is what we have done in our country. And as a way forward, we recommend that the multi-sector approach that we use to deal with HIV and AIDS, which has given us success, should be replicated for TB. And we've also learned, and we recommend that we need to replicate the best practices that we've learned from HIV and AIDS, so that as we tackle TB, we are not starting from scratch, but we are learning from what has happened. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lillian. Pervez.
Thank you so much. I'm Pervez Tufan. I'm from Pakistan, working with an organization called National Group of TB People. And my experience is a little different from these people because I'm more like involved at little upper level, because I'm working as a community representative and patient representative with the Stop TB partnership. And I'm also working with the DOTS expansion working group as a core group member. So I have a little bit different perspective from my colleagues. And why I got involved in this process, this was very important for me. And thanks to OSI and TAG, because when I worked with them, as an ex-TB patient, I was not knowing what the TB is even. and what's happening on ground in my country at grassroots level and at upper level. But when I joined OSI and TAG as an advisory committee member, I got to know what the TB is and what's happening around, what the ground realities are, and which provokes me to get more into it. And then I started thinking how I can be more proactive and active, like regarding the issues of the community. And with reference to the patients and community perspective, when I was working, and I'm still working with the grass, with the DOTS expansion working group and Stop TB, my major concern and my major focus is to raising patients' concerns and issues with the Stop TB, with the policymakers, and with the community perspective as well. And this was a great opportunity for me and for my community, and especially the patients who are suffering with the disease. And being at this level of being at the Stop TB and as a core group member, I always raise and try to focus on the patient's perspective, and always try to give the patient's perspective, and always focusing on the agenda of the patients. And I always try to give the high perspective, and always focusing on how we can be more visible at all level, particularly at upper level first, then at the grassroots level second. And this was a great opportunity for me, and which provided me to share at like what the ground realities are and how it's happening, and how as a patient and community we can work together at all level. And I always advocate for patients' rights and patients' perspective at wherever I was participating in person meetings at WHO and working groups, or whether I'm participating through conference calls or through discussing by emails, and the concern was always remained same, how we can work together and highlight patients' perspective and their issues. And my work was always focusing on three buzzwords like patients' involvement, empowerment, and advocating for their rights. And it was a great opportunity for me, and that I was able to participate in the Global Plan 2, and I along with my other community people, we all focus in that the patient's perspective, particularly the patient's involvement and empowerment, should be reflected in the Global Plan. And it's a great pleasure of ours, like we in this is now reflected in the Global Plan 2, particularly the component 5, which is very important for us. And in the same time, due to this advocacy activity, I was able to participate in international standard of care, and I was also able to participate in the patient charter development, which is very important document for us. And this is like one of the key documents now, which is in the global plan and in the global and the action in the GP2 as well. So it's another important achievement of ours. And what make a good visibility of mine due to this upper level involvement that I was having the access to a national TB control program. And I'm very happy to share with you people, like, one of the great achievements is, like, 2 days back I had a meeting with my national TB control program managers, and he said, like, we want you to be in the national TB and HIV working committee. And this was a great achievement. And he also said that we want to have you at the CCM, so you can bring the patient's perspective, particularly the TB patient's perspective, in all policy level documentation. So this is, I think this is one of the great achievements. And at the grassroots level, and I'm very happy to share with you that I am the product of this whole process, and this national group of TB people, which is the only one patient representative organization in Pakistan, this is also the product of this whole process. And this is also a great platform for the people at the grassroots level, that they can come together, we can sit together, we can come up with our own agenda and action plan, which we can advocate at all, like grassroots level, regional level, national level, and with the global plan and with the WHO. So in short, I know I have not too much time. The lesson learned, I'm really happy to share with the lesson learned throughout this whole process, because this process is challenging and frustrating. Challenging, like I have a backup of lot many people from the grassroots level, particularly the TB patients, who are looking at me, what I am working for them, what I am advocating for them. And this also always provoked me whether I'm doing justice with this title, the community representative or the patient representative. So which always, sometimes I got very frustrated, sometimes I got very much motivated, sometimes I got like, what am I doing? Always questioning myself whether I'm doing right or wrong. So within all this process, the lesson which I was learned that the consistency, if we are consistent with our cause and commitment, we will definitely get the result. Because many times I got frustrated when I was giving calls to my national TB control program, I want to fix my meetings, I want to have the time, I want to go over there, but there was no response. I got frustrated, but I started continuing getting into. And at the end, I got success. The patience is always very much there. We have to be very patient as an advocate or as an activist. And the follow-up is also very important. If we do the follow-ups, we will definitely getting the desired result. And most important is management of frustration and anger. This is very much important. If we manage our frustration and our anger, like having at all level, this will be the great success to us. And thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks. So as you heard from a lot of the speakers, that they have been working on various different levels and also through various different strategies. I know that I want to invite you folks to ask questions if you have any right now. Please. And I would also invite you to unpack some of these words like engagement and strategy, and because I think the devil is in the detail in how we do this work.
Hi, I'm Joost van der
Meer. It's not on, doesn't it?
No, now it's on. Yeah. I'm Joost van der Meer. I'm working for AIDS Foundation East West. We are an organization working on HIV in Eastern Europe and Central Asia. We are founded in Holland. First, I would like to thank the organizers to organize this session, because I think it's really exciting to have all these fantastic representatives here of the several parts of the world and share experience with us. But my questions are specifically for the representatives of Georgia and Armenia. We are trying to engage in HIV-TB in Central Asia at the moment, and one of the big problems, and that is, I think, maybe all over the former Soviet Union, is that you have the TB system and you have AIDS centers, and they do not talk to each other, but they are even, sometimes, they even don't want to talk to each other. They are enemies. So how did you manage to reconcile this, or to get these very different, parts of the healthcare system with very different histories, because the TB system is old, AIDS system is new. How did you manage to get them talking to each other? I'm very curious about that.
Thanks.
I'll tell you about this here, how it was in Georgia. We were able to start talking about it at the CCM meeting, because the director of Georgian Plus Group is a member of CCM. And the heads of TB hospital and TB programs and also HIV program are also members of CCM. And it's a good place to start talking about it. But we did not have this negative attitude from both of them, especially from all the TB people part. They were willing themselves to initiate something like a joint effort, to create some coordinating body. Although initially they were unwilling to get a community representative on this body. But eventually we were able to convince them that it is a good idea to have someone from the communities. Right now they have just had only two meetings, and I attended one of those meetings, and it was very, really, very interesting, because I was observing how people on the both sides were trying to figure out what they can do together and how they are going to do this. They were using the WHO guidelines about collaborative activities on TB-HIV collaborative activities, but they were talking about problems, practical problems that So again, all the paper, this everything is very logical and very good and implementable, but to do it practically, there are obstacles that are really hard to solve. Such something as an example, there is a problem of having one hospital or one institution where TB HIV patient can go and can have comprehensive treatment and care, both TB and HIV, for both diseases. And they were talking about how and where this department or hospital may be constructed. And again, everything comes down to resources, to lack of material resources to implement everything these. But the good thing is that there are people who are thinking about it and are willing to solve the problem.
Sandro?
Maybe I will disappoint you, because in our country, national HIV, AIDS and TB programs do not fight, and the centers will not fight.
Very good for you, I'm not disappointed.
They collaborate. Since last year, in our country, TB and HIV, AIDS issues addressed by CCM. So CCM made a decision to include TB issues and malaria also in their framework. So this is a high-level tribune where TB and AIDS program managers sit together and think together and address TB HIV collaboratively. And our project, which was implemented by OSI support, also helped to strengthen this joint address of HIV and TB. So we succeed to bring together all different levels of starting from communities, non-governmental organizations, and physicians who deal with HIV and TB, and managers level also. Even more, we succeed to organize a workshop for CCM members, and finally the resolution was adopted to address TB-HIV collaboratively. And this is in the process. Of course, I agree that AIDS services are more advanced in our region. I mean, CIS, former Soviet Union countries region. But TB services, after Global Fund opportunity, they became also advanced. Technical, different supports and different levels from WHO and other supported organizations came, and they have to be advanced. So step by step, TB specialists, they improve their level, in terms of collaboration, in terms of advocacy and joint activities.
Thank you very much. I'm very impressed by those experiences, and I think then countries in Central Asia and other countries in the CIS can learn a lot from your experiences, so maybe we can, after this session, exchange.
I have one thing to add to this. In Georgia, a very strong force that is driving TB forward is that the First Lady of Georgia, Sandra Roloffs, is TB ambassador, and she has done really a great and amazing work raising money for TB. And now we are going to have a new TB hospital, and there in it, where they are planning to have a TB HIV department. But so these personalities, individual people, can make a difference if they are authorities and if they have enough political power and worldwide authority. So you should maybe try to find someone at that level to support TB and HIV collaborative efforts.
We are a Dutch organization, so maybe we can find
Can you can suggest that in this region there will be someone, some authority who may be engaged in this.
I think the theme of political will is certainly something that we can touch upon again, because I think it, the way we get to political will could be very context-specific, but I think it's really important in how it actually allows for certain people in power who might be resistant to actually rethink their ideas. In relation to that, before Martina, I take your question, I wanted to point out two documents that document that. One of them is this one that's outside on Civil Society Perspectives on TB-HIV, which documents some of the successful strategies of previous OSI grantees, and then this one, which looks at the monitoring of TB project and of TB policy in five countries, and also documents how civil society has engaged in improving and strengthening TB policy. And then these other two we'll come back to later. Martin?
Thank you. My name is Martin Castellanos. I am the under director of the National TB Program in Mexico. My director is Dr. Ferreira. She's here too. Because my English is not too good, I had to write a little bit. But I want to say, all of you, thanks. Firstly, thanks because we learn about the whole your experience shared today. The fact is that HIV and TB co-infection is a big problem, this one cannot be solved because from the government only. So the fact is that we need to work with the NGOs. Very important issue for us. The only way to see the advance in this issue is working together with NGOs, talking about HIV and AIDS together now. And we know that we cannot together, the NGOs working with AIDS cannot talk with that, about AIDS without talking about TB, and we cannot talk about TB without talking about AIDS. So we are increasing the work, the task force, and the human resources, thanks to the AVE de Mexico. They are working very hard with us in the training courses to the Stop TB Nurses Network. Before we call it the DUST Nurse Network, but now is our Stop TB Nursing Network. And we are so glad to work together with Carlos Garcia de Leon and his team about this important issue for us. And we don't have a lot of problem with the co-infection yet, but we don't want a big problem about it. And that's why we are working very hard with them. Thank you.
Thanks,
Thank you,
Martin. Carlos. Thank you. So do other people have questions already? Please come to the front. Come to Mike. Yeah.
I'm Alubu Isaac, working as a state TB program manager in one of the 30 states in the southeastern part of Nigeria, and also a graduate student at the Department of Community Medicine, University of Nigeria, New Campus. My question is to the last presenter, especially in the area of stigma to the TB Patients Association. Back home, you see the problem we're experiencing is that you have this high level of stigma against TB patients, even the ex-TB patients. What has been your experience, maybe in Pakistan or in the course of your working with the Stop TB Partnership, in the management of these social stigma in the light of community advocacy? And especially when you talk to the management of anger and frustration. Thank you very
Thanks.
Much.
Thank you so much. I think this is a very important question. And with reference to the stigma and discrimination, I would like to give my own personal example. When I opened up my status and shared that I am a TB, ex-TB patient, my family members, like, you know, we live in an extended family members in Pakistan, and the marriage is very important in my country. when I open up this stigma and my status, one of my family members said, oh, you are telling other people that you are ex-TB patient, you will never ever get married. So this is like one of the stigma issue. If if somebody share that he or she is suffering with the disease, the first reaction by the society is that he or she should be excluded from everything. The advocacy issue, like for me and other advocates, is like destigmatization of the disease. And what we are doing particularly at the grassroots level, like we are trying to establish a group of people who are suffering with the disease, and working with them, first try to understand what the disease is. And the second is how we can destigmatize by opening up ourselves. You know, this is one of the issues that we didn't have any prominent figure in my country who is suffering with the disease and who can openly share that I am suffering with the disease. With reference to address the stigma and discrimination at the policy level, at the upper level, especially with the Stop TB level, we are trying to establish the constituencies, like we are trying to have a different kind of approaches, and we are focusing on the bottom-up approach, which is very important. Unless patient did not understand their status, their self by their own, there will be no process to address this issue. And it's very important, as earlier person said, that working together is very important. If we work separately, if I'm working differently, you working differently, government working differently, and WHO working differently, there will be no result. We are all a family, and still there is a question, who is the head of the family? Whether WHO is the head of the family, NTP head of the family, or the patients are the head of the family. But there is a joint effort is needed, and these stigmatization activities only can be addressed if we raise awareness. And more awareness, more visibility of the patients, more understanding of the disease, more and closely working jointly together will be addressing the issue. Thank you.
Good morning. It's Amazio from Brazil. Both Tamara and Carlos mentioned something that really strikes me is concerning the possibility of doing regional work. This is something that I would like to ask you, specifically regarding Mexico. I mean, in terms of population and complexity, the country is so big that I ask how is that possible to do a practical work, not only networking with the networks, but also doing practical works to influence the national policies. Actually, this is a question for all the members, because this is something that I would like to ask each one of you. If you think that it's possible to do work in the regional level, sub-regional level, neighbor countries, that may impact actually the national policies, because in terms of Mexico, I believe that the complexity of the country, as in Brazil, I think that it's possible to network with neighbor countries or other countries, but it's very hard to actually influence and change the policies in the country, as they have to regard budget and other specificities of the health system and so on and so forth. And then I asked Tamara also Samuel and Lilian and Pervez, I know Pervez has a lot of work in the region, know lots of countries, and how this can impact, I mean, in terms at least the neighbor countries, in the case of Mexico, if that's possible at least to do an impact work in Central America, for example.
Thanks, Azia.
Thank you, Azia. Of course, Mexico is a really complex country because it's so big. And our geographical position and our situation is so uncomfortable. A long time ago, at the beginning of the 20th century, a Mexican president says, so far from God, too near to the States. So in many ways, we're in an uncomfortable way, but Mexico is the the path for many migrants from Central and South America that are crossing to the U.S., and of course many Mexican migrants. There's a lot of movement. So we were thinking at the beginning of the project that we can have some kind of influence. Mexico has some kind of leadership with Central America, and there are a lot of partnerships and cooperation possibilities, particularly the AIDS issues. And the National Institute of Public Health, based in Mexico, it's a collaborating institute with UNAIDS, provides with a lot of diploma and courses for the Central American and English Caribbean countries. So there's a possibility of this kind of influence. But I have to say that in terms of this project, we try to work with the networks because we work so often with them because we're Latins more than North Americans in our culture. And there are a lot of things that we share and learn from our experiences and projects. But I have to say that we were just in the first steps to do that. Particularly, for example, I'm part of La Caso. I represent the Latin American and the Caribbean region in the International Council of AIDS Services Organizations. And there's no movement in my own network because it's more than awareness. Now we know about the problem. Now we began this kind of discussions, but we have 1 year discussing it by mail and with an electronic bulletin that is the monitoring and evaluation tool of the project. So I believe that we can impact the region. In the other side, we have beautiful experiences, and I say the word beautiful because they're really well. For example, the National TB Program has a national card, and you can receive care and treatment for TB in outside Mexico, in U.S., and in this side in Mexico. So we're trying to think in the civil society discussions something similar to mix and work with the co-infection, probably with Central America and with the North part. But it's so difficult because of the issue of budget. Of course, every country is independent to do that. So we have the possibilities, but we don't have nothing as a product.
Thanks. Pervez, you had something to add?
Yeah, I think this is very important as you, and I would love to share that the need is to document the things. Like if something is happening in Pakistan, it's not documented. And so many beautiful things are happening. I know so many movements, especially the involvement of grassroots people in India is going on. But there's no such document which we share. And we, like from somebody from India, we were sitting together and there's a great idea come up that they are planning to have a national conference and like involving all of patients from all over India. And they are also invited me to be there. And I'm sharing my experience, what I have learning from this all experience. And they're also sharing their experience. And they're, when they'll be back, they'll be doing the same exercise within their own particular countries, particular regions. And I'm trying to do the same in Pakistan. So, and the idea is we can come up with the collective efforts, what we are doing, and this best practices sharing is a good idea. And one of the good ideas that we can have influence at the regional level that my ex-National TB Control Program Manager, Dr. Karam Shah, he's recently shifted to Afghanistan. Afghanistan is a country which needs a lot. And we were discussing how we can share our experiences and how like I can give my input by designing the patient's perspective and community involvement, so there should be some kind of regional things going on. So, but there's a need to share experiences and document the things and share like this conferences and local level conferences and regional level conferences. And in the South Asia, we have like in India and Pakistan, we have the same tradition, like we have same value, we have same culture, and the things are also the same. And it might be good if we can share, have some sort of cultural exchange programs or experience in sharing, training and exercises. This will be definitely making impact.
And didn't you have a question? You.
May I also comment on the regional?
Yeah, go ahead, Tamara. Comment. And
just to answer Ezio's question about regional things, specificities. The region of South Caucasus is very specific because these three countries are geographically separated from the rest of the world, so they have to stick together. And despite the, maybe culturally they are not so similar, but the fact that we all were part of Soviet Union, and we have there is no language barrier between these countries because we can communicate in Russian. And because this geographically is very closed and there is a lot of migration and traveling between these countries, this makes our relationships, you know, if we even didn't want to have them, we have to. And as the proof of this, I could say that not only in the fields of HIV, AIDS or TB, people are trying to communicate, but I know that there are other regional coalitions in other fields, STDs and other medical and non-medical fields. This region is always kind of considered as a unity, because it has many, many common problems created by its geographical situation, by its common history. And we have very similar mentalities in our countries. For instance, during our two-day seminar that we hold for the, where we invited NGOs working in HIV/AIDS field, there are no TB organizations, unfortunately, not only in Georgia, but also in Armenia and Azerbaijan. But those who wanted to somehow engage in TB/HIV activities, during the seminar we learned that there are so many similarities. A little bit with a little kind of national specificities, so that we can come up with some, we can enrich each other, with, because when you have many solutions or many ideas of how to solve the problem, you are more closer to actually solving this problem. And that was very helpful. And we are now working on raising funds to be able to organize these seminars regularly. And we hope that we will have them.
Samvel, and perhaps even Lillian, because I know that you're part of a network that works not only across Africa, but also internationally. So, Samvel, you
I
first.
I would add that in our case, we can talk about two level of regions. And regional activities. First is the major regional level, which is CIS region, former Soviet Union countries region. And second is a smaller region, which is Caucasus region, three countries, Armenia, Georgia, and Azerbaijan. So at two these type of levels, we have different regional joint activities and cooperation. At in CIS levels, we have our established cooperation since more than 15 years. At Caucasus, smaller regional levels, during the last 2 years, we had a different regional meetings and workshops. Our CCMs were meet to discuss different issues at the CCM levels, addressing TB, HIV also collaboratively. We had on HIV AIDS issues, WHO organized lead workshops on universal targets for 2010, setting up at the country levels and then monitor the process. And finally, by the end of this month, WHO will organize a regional meeting at the ministers' level at the national TB and HIV/AIDS program managers also are invited, where TB/HIV issues will be addressed also at this high-level meeting. So these steps and series of activities has a regular. Are implemented at regular basis.
Thank you very much. I think in addition to what has already been said, it is important that now we begin engaging regional bodies that already exist. And in my case, for example, we realize that we already have bodies that are existing. We have regional networks. We have regional bodies that bring together NGOs and international NGOs, but also importantly, we have regional offices for WHO. So these bodies at different levels need to get engaged, and it is our role as activists, as advocates, to make sure that they get, you know, we hook them up so that they can be part of the process. And also, looking at this and relating it to the first question that was asked, how we can get these two, I mean, these different groups to buy the idea, to begin speaking together, and especially the policy and decision makers, is that, first of all, we need to get the policies that are already in place by WHO and guidelines, and make sure that these policies, when they get to the different levels, are interpreted to fit within the systems and structures and what is already existing, so that we don't take these guidelines and policies as Bible truth, but they can be interpreted to fit the current status and the local interpretation of these different groups. So that, for example, when you talk about integration, people should be able on their own to decide what they understand by integration. When you talk about collaboration, they can themselves define on what activities, what programs they want to collaborate. In that way, they begin talking, and I can assure you that what is happening at the international level, at country level, can be replicated at different levels, so that we are not forcing them to work together, but they can decide at what levels they want to work together. Thank you.
And one good reflection of that particular point that Lillian just made is this example that even the panelists have sort of exemplified, is that in Armenia, the work happens through the CCM. So though the WHO recommends that a coordinating body between TB-HIV is created, Armenia has decided to not actually create a separate body, but just work through the CCM because it already has many of the same stakeholders there. But in many other countries, they have decided to create a separate CCM. So I think that's another example of how a WHO policy gets interpreted to meet the country's specific context. Pervez, and then your question, please.
I think adding into this, if we want to have such sort of regional impact, we should have come all together with a single or might be 2-point agenda. And we should have one document which we can proceed and go with that. And I think this patient charter is one of the good document, and this is endorsed by the WHO, and this addresses all the patients and other issues. If we can make focus of this, that we can advocate for this, this will be a good start, and we can have a regional impact on that because of this is a good document. And along with that, WHO's policies are existing. WHO has an interim TB and HIV policy. And this is also reflecting that we can work together, and this is a good document to follow with at the regional level, particularly at the country level, to make some sort of regional impact on that. Thank you.
Your question, please.
My name is Efko Haskri. I'm working for Project Hope in Uzbekistan. I have a question, well, more or less for all the members of the panel. It's right. I realize that the subject of this discussion is TB-HIV in particular, but I'm wondering, like in Uzbekistan, in Pakistan, I think most countries, the vast majority of TB patients are not people living with HIV, they are TB patients. Being a TB patient ideally is something you are for 6 months and then you are cured and that's it. A person living with HIV/AIDS will always live with HIV/AIDS. So I'm wondering, in your experience, in your associations, is there any such difference? Are just TB patients not, mm-hmm. are they participating in your associations, and are they not, well, is there any reluctance from their part because they think, well, in 6 months I no longer am a patient, or is there equal participation?
Pervez, you can.
I think this is a very important question. And as far as my country experience is concerned, like we are not having patients' representatives, especially the people who are suffering with the TB. And they are not visible anywhere. And we didn't have any patients' representative organization even. And these two approaches are going differently, like National TB Control Program is doing their own, and National AIDS Control Program is going their own. and there's no connection in between. And most of the things being done is by the, unfortunately, by the National AIDS Control Program. And this lack of visibility is very much there. And a lot much stigma is attached to this TB, especially TB in my country. As I shared earlier, when I shared myself, there were a lot many things happening around. But this is very important that we need to make this TB issue more highlighted at everywhere, particularly at the grassroots level. And we should be focusing on the patient's perspective, what they are thinking about the disease and how they are feeling. And this is very important. As I earlier said, last day I had my meeting with my National TB Control Program manager, and he said, just come with some kind of patient's perspective and how we can make them visible, how we can involve them in our planning and ongoing actions. But I am doing, like, I'm trying to make them visible in my country. We have come up with the patient's representative organization. This is only the TB patients organization. And we have come up with our own agenda. Though we are collaborating, we are working together, but we are focusing with our own agenda. And our one of the core issues of ours is, like, we are focusing to raise awareness about the disease. And we are trying to understand by first ourselves what the disease is, and then disseminating this information broadly to everywhere. So people should understand this is a disease, this is exists, and this is a killer disease, and this is a silent killer. And there should be awareness regarding this disease. And definitely working together is a good lesson, but then the need is the TB people should come together. They should come in front like the HIV people. HIV people are very much like visible around in my country, but there is no TB people there. And I do agree with this, like there's a need of shift, like particularly from HIV to TB and TB to HIV, and TB people should come with their own agenda and come together and focus on their rights, and they should demand, because there's no demand from their side. They are not coming together. They are not asking for policies. Our focus is, like my focus is, we should come together, especially the TB patients, and go to the National TB Control Program, from there to upper level, the WHO, and like making TB high on the agenda. Thank you so much.
I think linked with your question is also another observation around the strategy, which is that there are certain other health issues that people can get cured of, but because it's been politicized around gender issues or around issues of poverty, that they then become a focal point of organizing. So even if you're cured of, the health issue, that you're politicized through that experience. And then, of course, not all patients who go through a treatment regimen will turn out to become activists. But that if we have a sort of politicization of the health issue, then you can actually address, get a community of activists out of that experience to see what of that experience did not meet their needs. And so in India, for example, there are people who are organizing not around TB, but are organizing around poverty, or organizing around the need for access to care in their communities, and making that the focal point of their organizing, and then in that context also taking on the issue of TB. So we should also be a little creative in seeing what are the priorities that communities are coming to the table with, and seeing how we can integrate TB into that work. Please go ahead.
Right. Thank you for your nice presentation, sir. And I think I learned a lot from the experiences. But then it seems you've mentioned so many advocacy activities going on and collaborative activities, but I'm not sure how much impact it has in increasing what we call the voluntary counseling and testing, especially with regards to TB patients, getting TB patients tested for HIV, which in some settings is not an easy issue. As one of you mentioned, the TB program is somehow older than the HIV programs. Hence, we have seen dot centers coming on first, then HIV VCD sites, and later So in some settings, it's difficult to bring these centers or sites, you know, close to each other so as to facilitate our testing, which is our ultimate aim, because until we test these patients, we know their status, we cannot offer them much help.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know in your activities if this has made a significant impact as to increasing the acceptance, you know, of this test. At the same time, the ART uptake. Again, I think I need to learn more from the Mexican experience, especially in relation to the cross-border issue. We have a similar situation. We also border by a country, and sometimes you can diagnose patients, register them, put them on treatment. Along the line, they cross to the other end of the border where they actually live. If I can get you right, you said through your collaboration with the other counterparts, patients can even receive treatment from or continue treatment from the other end. Do you have any difficulties in getting back the treatment outcome? Please, if I can learn, because getting them transferred treatment to the other end is one thing, but after completing treatment, getting back the treatment outcome, the
results. There are two questions there. One is whether there is an increased uptake of VCT amongst TB patients, and the second one is how do you actually manage communities that are migrant and ensure that they not only have access to services but also have a sort of coherent surveillance mechanism so that treatment outcomes are documented. Samvel, I know you and Tamara had experiences in that. Maybe you can talk about that.
There is activity through our two projects, included advocacy among, if you remember, I mentioned we had two targets, service providers and those who use these services. So among communities, we identified specific groups that we focused on our activities on. These were militaries, injecting drug users, and prisoners. And we have the figures of increased voluntary testing among all those groups. We reached militaries through the series of lectures, and we distributed booklets about the TB itself, the transmission, the symptoms, treatment, and so on, and the TB-HIV co-infection, the other one was. We distributed those booklets in prisons also, but we didn't have access to prisons, and we used our collaboration with other NGO, HIV AIDS service providing NGO, who had this access. And through this was our first project, and through the second project we had such activities aimed to injecting drug users. In Georgia, they are they represent majority of HIV positive people, 68%. Other sources say it's 70 or 71, so it's more than half, two-thirds. So this is a really at-risk group that we identified needs to be advocated. I don't know how many of TB patients were among those. We don't have these figures. But some of them, of course, were TB patients who voluntarily tested on HIV. And in the five-year TB plan, national plan, one of the objectives is to test all the TB patients on HIV, because the officials in this field, they understand that this is a key point in identifying in having and gathering relevant data about co-infection. But there is currently, unfortunately, there are no sufficient resources to test all TB patients on HIV. And if even they were available, there is another issue of this voluntary thing, because you cannot make anyone to be tested on HIV. If the patient does not want it, then they won't test. So we have much more referrals from HIV field to TB to test on TB, then vice versa. This is the current situation in Georgia.
According to approved policy in Armenia, VCT services are integrated into the existing healthcare services. So we can state that for the last 2 years, there is a significant increase in HIV VCT provision for TB patients. But of course, we can state also that this is not enough countrywide. So our organization advocated inclusion of TB, HIV joint and collaborative activities into the country proposal submitted to the Global Fund last year and approved consequently, and it's already signed agreement between Global Fund and National TB Program as a principal recipient, and this program will be started at the end of this year. And in there is a separate objective of TB-HIV collaborative activities in the program, and according this objective, all TB patients, to all TB patients, will be HIV VCT services will be advised, and it will be created universal access to HIV VCT services with further antiretroviral treatment, medical and non-medical care, and support provision to all people who are in need. So, and surveillance system will be improved, referral system will be improved, and everything is included in the program. So we hope that next year we will complete this activity.
Thank you, Samba. Carlos?
I want to comment about this issue. I think it's really related with the last question that you make, because it's not only an issue of testing. It's not an issue only to inviting from the TB program to the AIDS people living with HIV/AIDS and in the other way. I think stigma discrimination is part of the context of both situations. What I think is that TB is a forgotten problem, something that is invisible, that people that are living with HIV/AIDS don't want to know about that issue, because it's another kind of stigma. It's related more with poverty and with a lot of myths around the illness. So that situation put them so far from testing, from TB issue. And for the people who are living with good tuberculosis, HIV/AIDS, it's in my country, in the context of Latin America, a sexual issue. So this another kind of stigma related with that. So they are people who are not perceiving themselves in any kind of risk. So this is a complicated situation. Of course, the national programs are impacting them. For example, they have a mobile laboratory that is going to many cities all around the country, and they are testing not only for TB, also for HIV. But those issues made us a need. That's what we are thinking, work together, because they should know the social perspective, and we should know the medical issues that are related with that. And finally, I don't know about the surveillance that they are making in the binational card that works in the U.S. side and the cross-border issues, but the responsibles of that program are backwards, so go and attack them at the end of the presentation.
Thank you. Lillian?
Before you go, thank you for your question, and I just wanted to say that I think your question brings us to the fact that it is important that we have community involvement. And by community involvement, we are aware that there are people who go to HIV/AIDS clinics and they don't go to TB clinics, but we are also aware that there are those who attend to TB clinics and are not aware of HIV. And what we are advocating for and what we are struggling to ensure that is in place is to make sure that if somebody goes to a TB clinic, the nurse, somebody who is attending to this person, is able to bring out the information related to HIV to make this person aware that there is a possibility that this person could be having HIV, and therefore even if they are not willing to be tested at that moment or they are not finding it comfortable to do the test within that facility, they can get the services somewhere else. So this is what we are trying to ensure that is in place, such that this healthcare worker who is dealing with TB has got information, has got knowledge about HIV. And secondly, we are also struggling, and in some, for example, in our country, we've come up with, you know, community mobilization activities. We have one of our groups called Mama's Club, which goes out conducting drama activities, and they have come up with drama programs that bring out issues of TB in the communities. And we believe that knowledge is power. So if members at the community level have got knowledge about what is happening, where somebody, for example, would be aware that if I have TB, probably there's a possibility that I could be HIV infected, then they would seek for the services. So we are trying by all means to ensure that the communities, people themselves are empowered, have knowledge, have information, and we believe that with information, with knowledge, then they can be able to seek for services. Thank you.
Thank you, Lillian. You know, in listening to your response right now, it makes me think about what are we doing in the near future and how are we going to promote this advocacy momentum, particularly with the new generation of activists. And I want to ask the panel, what are their recommendations for maintaining this momentum and promoting among the new generation of young activists in your country? What are you doing to promote the advocacy participation around TB and HIV? You can start, Pervis.
I think this is another, again, important issue. Like, we are not having much activist, especially at the local level. And this is very much needed, especially with reference to the TB patients. And we have some very active people with reference to the HIV, but we didn't have any TB activists. And I'm very much ashamed that I am the only one who is trying to raise this issue at everywhere. What I have learned from my experiences, like having more and more people who can raise the voice. And within that, I was like, as I earlier said, I had discussion with my National TB Control Program Manager, and he was very much inspired the discussion, and he said that, okay, do come to us. We have registered patients who are suffering with the TB, and he said he can share that data with me, and he also suggested that I can go to the patients at the grassroots level, and I can also visit different hospitals and share this information with the people. And second level, but at the organizational level, that national group of TB people, what we are trying to do is, we are trying to find out the patients who are willing to come out and give their face, and we are trying to have to develop different kind of groups at grassroots level in different regions in my country. Currently, we are able to identify 50 TB patients who are eager, who are ready to give their face, and as an organization, we are building their capacity on three issues, particularly what advocacy is, what TB and HIV is, and how they can advocate for their rights and responsibilities. And we are doing different kind of activities currently. What I am doing is I'm traveling nationally. I'm visiting different hospitals and trying to find out a person within the hospital who is ready, who is there at the hospital and want to spend his or her time. Like when the other people comes in the hospital, he's ready to advocate and share the information with the people. And secondly, what we are trying to do is, like, within this group of 50 TB people, we are trying to identify like a kind of core lead person who can be a peer leader, and I'm trying to build the capacity of that person to work as an activist. And within this group, we are trying to have kind of 10 active people, and linking this group of 10 people with the National TB Control Program, and particularly at the provincial TB control programs and district level control programs, so they can be involved in all this kind of activities. And the next step which we are thinking is, like, we are trying to have our meeting with the policymakers and giving our perspective that this is the patients and community perspective, particularly the TB patients perspective, and we are looking to have this activities. And the good thing is that my TB control program manager like this very much, and when I'll be back, I will try to find out the time, and I hope he will also be able to manage his time, and we will sit together, and we'll be sharing our like database with him, and he is also sharing his database with me, and within that we're trying to start a kind of a sort of capacity building exercises at grassroots level. And the second thing is, again, I'm focusing on the patient charter. This is a good document if until and unless people did not know what our rights are and where are the services and where we can get these services from, this will not be the achieved. And the people at the grassroots level, I think one of the great problem is that resources are there, services are there, but people did not know where the services are, especially I'm again focusing on the people who come from very far-flung areas. In my country, there are different system, health system structures very much, not very much well established. People have to stay in a queue for a long, long hours, waiting for their turn to get medicine. And at the end, when 1 o'clock comes, doctor says, okay, it's off time, you can go back. And he or she has to go back. So this is another advocacy point, where and how we can establish. And this development of the local activist will be definitely contributing to national group of advocates, and then regional group of advocates, and the global level advocates. And I hope the next year I will be coming with a team of activists from Pakistan. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pervez.
Well, thank you very much. Advocacy is about numbers. Advocacy is having a strong voice. And our recommendation for all of us is that if we have to have a strong body of activists and advocates, we need to form partnerships. And these partnerships range and should be at different levels. So we have to have partnerships with the patients, we have to have partnerships with community-based organizations, non-government organizations, development partners, and everybody. And to me, this is a way forward. And secondly, you cannot advocate, you cannot be an activist unless you have information, unless you're talking from an informed position. And therefore, it is very, very important that we get out and give skills, give knowledge to especially patients or those people who have gone through TB so that they can join our team. And of course, it is also important that we get basic facts about TB. And therefore, these people need to be knowledgeable about the facts so that we are speaking with one voice but from an informed position.
I think that we're a little bit far to have TB activists, in at least in our region. I think that trying to share the model from the HIV/AIDS world to the TB world is not exactly the same thing. But what we think that we can do is to promote that more HIV activists are related and work together with the TB issues. Because I agree with some question. The TB people, when they feel that they are far from the illness, they will go so far. They should not make this their lifestyle. And in the HIV/AIDS situation, it's absolutely different. Because the politicization of the situation, because there are some kind of rewards when you are HIV positive. There are a lot of good things being positive because of a lot of social things that are related with the illness. So I don't think that we should make the same exact thing. The other thing that I think is that empowerment is a key word in this. We have to empower people living with any other diseases. But that should create before a human rights culture, and we don't have that. If we can change our cultures to a human rights-based cultures, we will not need many activists, because everybody can raise their hands and say, I have the right for medicine, and I have the enough awareness and empowerment and ownership of my own situation, so I can raise my hand by myself. But with the young activists, that it's a very good question, because most of the new cases in my country are happening in very, very young people. So we're trying to empower them, we're trying to inform them, to have evidence-based advocates. But most of that, we have to change a little bit more of that culture. For example, changing words like patient to people living with TB, that it's obviously a need, because, for example, for us, people living with HIV/AIDS, it's a word that put the first thing that you're a person, not someone that it's only related with AIDS. You're a person with all your values. And finally, I want to say that we have a lot of challenges. And I think that people living with HIV/AIDS and the NGOs related with AIDS work are a little bit overrepresented with all the other illnesses. So what we have to do is to begin to speak from the health perspective, not only speaking about AIDS, not only speaking about TB. There are a lot of another co-infections, hepatitis, for example. And there are a lot of words, a lot of issues that we have to raise. So I think that we have to continue this work. We're in the first stages, the first steps, and to make social mobilization, but I think in the human rights perspective.
Well, I very much share what Carlos just said, and I can't be so optimistic as Perez is, coming from Georgia, where stigma for TB is so high, higher than for HIV or anything else. We can't expect creation of a TB community organization in Georgia in the foreseeable future. But how to maintain advocacy momentum? It is possible still, because other organizations, other forces, other people can also be very much interested in moving TB agenda forward, because TB is something based on the nature of the disease. It is something that may affect all of us, everyone. So civil society organizations may be very active if they are made aware of the problem. Some other, like I mentioned, such individuals as a TB ambassador in our country, such individuals can make a huge difference in it. And also, we should not forget that HIV activists, HIV community, can be a driving force in this process, because they have these experiences of advocacy, of community activism. And they can take on this TB-HIV issue. And TB-HIV co-infection is one of the major challenges of addressing TB as a whole. So it somehow will contribute to fighting TB as a whole. So these are the ways that I can now see how we can support TB movement.
Thank you, Tamara.
If it is already 5 years since AIDS community activists are involved into the national AIDS program development and realization process in Armenia, TB activism is not such a revealed, and there are no advanced TB activists in our country. There are no advanced community-based organizations, non-governmental organizations dealing with TB issues compared with organizations, HIV/AIDS activists. So our TB-HIV project was the first one which has created a link between these two issues at the community level and formed the basis for future TB-HIV activism in our country. Thank you.
There were so many interesting comments in that round. I was a little shocked, actually, on some. Yeah, please come to the microphone. I did want to engage in two of those comments. One was Carlos's comment about HIV/AIDS having so many social positive things that come out of it, that maybe we should see how we can actually create those positive things for the TB community. I personally, as a person living with HIV, have a hard time understanding all of those positive things and weighing it with all the things that, as an immigrant, I've had to also face that haven't been so positive. So that's just a personal reflection, perhaps. And then the other thing was that TB-HIV activists can be the driving force of TB activism. And just from someone who has been doing TB-HIV as the primary area of my work, I've always come to it as a as from the perspective of partnership, I feel like TB-HIV, because most of the people globally living with TB aren't actually TB-HIV people, we should figure out how can, what is the way in which TB-HIV can contribute to this conversation, but not also usurp the space so that people who are quote-unquote mono-infected with only TB don't have access to those advocacy spaces. I feel like it's something that we should think about more as to how we can contribute to creating a movement that enhances, supports, increases the participation of people living with TB into this conversation, as opposed to only having people living with TB-HIV in this conversation. Please.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry I was not here during the presentations, but at least I've been here during the discussions. And I wanted to allude to the fact that when you talked of community involvement, it is very critical, but it has to be at all levels, right from the program level. Because if we don't provide them with the environment, the conducive environment, or the platform for their involvement, they will just stay back. And what we have seen in our country, I come from Botswana with a very high rate of co-infection, between 60% and 80%. In that situation, of course, HIV organizations are always there to advocate for TB patients, because after all, they are the majority who experience the TB. But I don't see a situation where it is very possible to have separate TB advocacy groups and then from HIV advocacy groups. Because what we are really calling for right now is the integration of the two. And it is very difficult. We have actually moved forward with the collaboration between TB and HIV in our country. But the most difficult thing is where to start. We started with establishing a TB-HIV advisory committee at the national level. But then it was we, the TB people or the program people, who initiated and enforced that. The HIV side is the least bothered about TB, because even when you go to them and want records of those people who are on ART or PMTCT who have TB, they won't even have those numbers. They will say, go to the TB program. And yet, TB is one of the factors or the causes of death among their people. So it is very important that we, the TB program, we stand up and make sure that there's this strong collaboration which trickles down to the district level and even to the facility and community levels. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that comment and for your leadership and on the country level. That is really amazing. Did people have any response to the comment? Yeah, Lillian?
Thank you very much for that comment. And I think the way forward on that is that's the reason why we need to have the communities mobilized. That's where we need to have people who can advocate, people who can lobby, so that there is a force to the HIV community to work together with the TB community. Because it has, evidence has shown that when people demand, when people push, when people force, especially the recipients, they are good results. And that's where we need to come in as activists, as people who are living with the diseases, to demand that there is a collaboration, to demand that there is an integration at different levels. So that's where our role becomes very, very critical.
Pervez?
I think having a collaborative body is a good idea. But before that, we have to have people who can give their faces. And what we are missing at grassroots level, the patient suffering with the TB, especially in my country, we didn't have any face. And until and unless we didn't have face, we cannot make the momentum. And for building the momentum, we need activists. We need people who can work as an active person, who can advocate for their rights. And again, focusing awareness is not there, stigma is attached, and we are not having very much sort of collaboration. Like there is a gap between the community people and the policy people, and the National TB Control Program is doing their own. The voice is not there, community voice is not there, patient's voice is not there, patient's perspective is not there. And until and unless, as Lilan said, we didn't have the active group of people who were ready to advocate for their rights, we will not getting that same momentum. And the need is very much there that we should have the people. Identification of the people, for me, this is very important. Identify the group of people and making them aware that, look, this is our cause, this is our disease. And until and unless we will not get together, we will not raise our voice, we will not demand our rights, we will not demand for medicines, we will not demand for health services, there will be no change. And unfortunately, there is no TB-HIV policy in my country. There is no community involvement guideline is there. There is no community perspective is there. So as an activist, we have to do a lot. And as an active advocate or activist, I am a role model for so many people. And what I am doing is a great example for others. Like we all are doing in great example. We have lot many people here around here. And the thing is there, we should come up with some kind of joint strategy which goes straight to the grassroots level and getting people at grassroots level, keeping them aware, getting momentum, focusing on TB first, then going to TB and HIV, then going together, then having collaborative bodies, then starting movement at grassroots to national to global level. And this is very much important. We need more people, we need more faces asking and demanding for rights and services. Thank you so much.
Well, I also have a disagreement with that comment, because I actually think we need to work concurrently where the problems arise. I don't feel like we have to focus first on TB, then on TB-HIV, and then on first start from the local, then the national, then the global. I think one of the realities is that there are various opportunities that arise in different places, and there are issues that arise in different communities, and that, you know, one of the ways in which we've come to TB-HIV is just from realizing that TB is the major cause of death amongst people living with AIDS. Are we going to wait for a TB movement to happen before we start doing TB-HIV work? It doesn't make sense. And actually, your example is the prime example of how, without a grassroots movement, we still can engage on a global level of advocacy and use the credibility that we build as advocates on a global level to leverage and create that kind of greater momentum for TB on the grassroots. So I do feel like we have to be more sort of even opportunistic in some ways, but just more responsive to where the issues are and where we can ensure that people who are infected and affected by either TB or TB-HIV get the services as soon as possible. Pervez, you had a response, and then Lillian?
With due respect, I'm not agreeing with this approach. Like, I do agree with that. Like, we have, like, I'm called myself as global activist, and what am I doing? Like, I'm trying to get more and more people at grassroots level. And my approach is that, like, until and unless TB people are not visible, there will be no desired results. And the force is there at the ground level. Definitely, we cannot work alone. We need global people, we need grassroots people, we need national people. But the most important people are the community people and the people who are suffering with the disease. If they are not active, if they are not involved, there will be no result.
Lillian?
Thank you very much. I think the approaches and strategies have to be different, depending on different countries, different regions, and also looking at where each country is. But of course, one of the things that I've been reflecting on is that, you know, while we talk about all this, to some people it is a job, to some people it is an accomplishment, to some people it is a duty. But when it comes to the person who is living with the disease, It is the passion. It is a commitment. And I just want to give an analogy so that we can understand what I'm talking about. At one time, we had a chicken and a goat, and they were asked to make a contribution at someone's wedding. And when it came to the chicken, it gave an egg, and that was a contribution. But when it came to a goat, it didn't have an egg to give, but it had to give its own life. And this is what it had to say. White to you, it is a contribution. To me, it is a total commitment. And this is what we are going through. So to that person who is living with a disease, to that activist, to that advocate, and to you who are seated here, it could be the passion that is driving you. It could be the commitment and the total commitment. But to some, it would just be a contribution. And therefore, we need to be guided by all this. We need to understand as we engage, as we get involved, that, you know, we are getting into a world where somebody needs to first of all understand whether it is going to remain a contribution, whether they have to offer the total commitment, probably by doing away with their job. So these are issues that we need to be guided by as we get engaged and as we lobby and advocate for integration, as we lobby and advocate for collaboration. And that's why at the beginning I say that it is very, very important to give people opportunity to discuss amongst themselves how and when and which strategy they want to use in, you know, looking at all these issues.
Thanks, Lillian. Other questions from the floor? I was also wondering if, sort of linked to what Lillian was saying, if the panelists had any questions for the audience.
It's not a question, it's like it's a suggestion. When you go back, take this charter with you, copy of the charters around, I hope, and try to translate this into local languages and disseminate more and more information to the people at grassroots level. So this is one way forward that we can create more activists within the community. Thank you.
My question goes to if we have any national TB program manager or AIDS manager. I would like to find out how and what are your expectations of us as representatives of the communities living with the diseases? How would you want us to get engaged so that at the end of the day we can all achieve our common destiny, our common goal?
Any NTP managers? Martin, do you want to answer the question? Okay. the question was, Lillian, you can ask the question again.
My question is that from my own perspective, we are all striving to achieve a common goal. We all have a common destiny. So as a program manager, what do you expect of us as communities or representatives of communities living with HIV and AIDS? What do you see as our role, and how do you envisage us working together in partnership with you so that we can get where we want to get?
As I told you before, it's not possible to the government to solve the problem from the perspective, the governmental perspective. So we need to work together. Fortunately, in Mexico we have a lot of NGOs working with AIDS. I think in all your countries have you groups like that. But we need to share experience, to sit, to plan, to because a lot of health workers cannot. They don't know about the magnitude of the HIV/TB problem. So in even the binomial HIV and TB together. So that's why we start We started 2 years ago with the initial Stop TV partnership in Mexico, which one is one part of the one of the work groups is the TVAs, where Carlos Garcia de León is working in. So from the government, we start the initiative to install the Stop TV partnership. And our Stop TV partnership has at least 5 working groups. And each working group work hard separately, and at least twice a year we join the experiences in the working group the monitoring and evaluation. So that's why we can do it, because we delegate the problem in different kinds to the different working groups. In the working groups, it's essential to work with the NGOs. So it's just to call for the action to the people who knows about it. And NGOs, the activists, they know a lot how to empower people living with HIV and TB. Mostly HIV people is empowered, as everybody says this morning. But we need to empower TB people in working groups. And we are thinking, and when we're going back to our country, to do it. Of course, I think in the next Congress, we are going to bring some experiences about working group of TB patients empowered.
Thanks, Martin. And also, you know, for Mexico, it would be great for the next AIDS conference, which is going to happen in Mexico, to also have a much stronger visibility of TB-HIV. So that's another part that Mexico can contribute to. Go ahead.
I would like to just share the experience that we had a couple of years ago in Rio, when the head of the TB program asked me to try to create a strategy to mobilize society for TB and civil society for TB. And I made a mapping of the organizations and the populations who were most affected in the state of Rio, and then I invited most of these organizations, people who were working with this population, to a series of workshops, which and it was incredible, because there were the participants. Sometimes the workshops were varying from 60 to 85 participants each, and there was not a single person, not a single person or a participant, meaning groups of women, sex workers, prisoner population, street population, street children, obviously HIV and AIDS. The state of Rio is far the worst situation in Brazil, and we had a huge number of organizations, for example, only black women organizations, all sorts of communities, and many slums, associations of people living in slums, participating in that. And it was incredible, because everybody had his stories of people who work with them. Most of them had stories of people in the families, and despite this incredible quantity of cases and experiences, they TB continued to be invisible. It's I don't know how can that be invisible, but since we started this workshops in 2003. The spread of the information went in such a way, and we built a forum of NGOs fighting TB in the state of Rio, which has over 80 organizations, and it works incredibly fast, and with diverse population, with prison population, with street children, in many slums they have diverse strategies to mobilize society, identify cases, bring them to the services, and try to help in the treatment adherence, and all this thing that and this initiative which has a real community participation, and the meetings, there is a monthly meeting of all the organizations, and they are boiling with information and people and participation. It's very exciting, the Forum of AIDS and JOS. It was without any money. It works without any support. It's incredible because I sometimes get astonished at myself because it doesn't have financial support from anybody, but they just work together. It's incredible. It's a real community initiative, and it has started from an initiative from the state. I mean, the state program of TB, decided to make this mobilization, and it's because what we have to do first of all is awareness raising, you know, because population sometimes have problem and they can see the impact of the problem. I mean, the majority of people with AIDS don't acknowledge that TB is the number one cause of their death. And you have to face the problem. And it's extremely productive to work with TB, and it's extremely cost-effective because it's a cheap treatment, it's very cheap, and then you reduce morbidity and mortality in an incredible scale. So it only has advantages of doing that, but it sometimes it's simple the fact that you bring awareness and then things goes for itself and as it happened in Rio.
Thanks, Azia, for that really sort of practical demonstration of how we can do community building.
Right, I'm just trying to respond to the challenge or to how programmer managers, NTP or NSP managers feel about your work, expect from you in the future. Of course, looking at the magnitude of the TB and HIV, especially in our sub-region, I can say for sure it has gone beyond the scope of NTP or NSCPs. Hence, the need for partnership, the need for involvement and active participation of all stakeholders, especially activists, advocates, you know, social mobilization groups like you. You can play a very, very big role, very significant role. Of course, we have seen from your experience you've shared with us that you've already doing that. But what we expect from you, speaking from a point of NTP manager or senior personnel, is to further strengthen or intensify, you know, your advocacy activities, right? The situation calls for partnership. Of course, you can play a big role, especially in relation to promoting health education, promoting awareness among people who are affected, right? Of course, you can also improve the appearance rates, especially in relation to TB and, of course, HIV, and as well as the uptake of ARTs, right? We have seen in some settings, ARTs would be provided, but the uptake still remains low. So your role goes beyond advocacy in relation to raising awareness. But tell them that the services are there, and if you get tested, the benefits are there. ART is there. Other drugs are there, such as cotrimoxazole preventive therapy. My only worry is, as I have seen in some settings, is the division that we have seen among advocacy groups. It is very, very important for you, in as much as you want to speak on behalf of the patients, to give them faces, to make their voices heard, to advocate for them so that they can access quality service. You should also come together, avoid forming so many groups, because this can create what we call infighting or conflicting interests, as we have seen in some settings. It's very important for you to come as groups. One of you has already said that you cannot do it alone. Make sure you come into groups, get all that you need from NTPs or NSCPs in terms of support, it is, in as much as possible, very important for you to get involved, to get relevant information, to be updated with what is going on, because you are representing the people at the grassroots, right? So that if you are in one voice, if you speak in one voice, avoid division, you can always get what you want from NTPs. But if you are divided, NTPs, NSCPs will be confused in terms of who to support. Hence, it is very important for you to come in a single file, in one voice, with common interests, with common focus, with common goal, so that NTPs and NSCPs can better understand you as a group, to be reckoned with. Thank you.
Could you also please identify yourself?
Oh, sorry. I am Musa Abidjalo. I'm representing the NTP of the Gambia.
Of Gambia. Correct.
Right, the Gambia.
Thank you so much. Right. Carlos, you had a question?
It's a comment around what you're saying. I understand I don't want to be a personal of the government to work with all that NGOs and that all the thinking ways that we have. I understand clearly the need that you have. But in the other hand, there's another way to read that. I believe a lot in diversity of thinking, diversity of understanding a problem, a situation, or something like that. So I know that it's more complicated, but sometimes it's impossible to have only one voice. I want to be clear that I don't represent the Mexican grassroots living with HIV/AIDS and probably TB. I'm representative of some groups. But all the gender issues that are affecting more for women, for example, I understand them, but I cannot talk about them. So I understand that for the national programs in TB and also from AIDS, it's so difficult to hear many voices. But that's the way that we have to understand our communities. Our countries are complicated, are complex, so there's a lot of diversity on them. So many times you have to hear many, many voices to understand it. And with a little bit of the passion that she was talking about, work will be easier. Of course, sometimes NGOs and organizations and movements should find a way to have a good dialogue and a high-level dialogue, probably putting all together their needs, and that's the best way. And we have extraordinary examples, for example, from Brazil in our region, Latin America. They have a national forum of NGOs, and they discuss this, and finally they go to the government with one position. Many voices, one position. That's only comment.
Thanks, Carlos.
But in one thing, you were very right, that you mentioned that we should provide information to our constituencies, to communities, about where they can get services, tests, and how, and what is the procedure of this. We did exactly this with in the frame of our first project. And one of the booklets provided the addresses and telephone numbers of the centers where people can go and get their free TB testing and other services that they need and care. So that was really very useful, because when you talk about the co-infection, about the threat of co-infection, about the all the negative things that may follow this, you should give some practical advice. So what you do if you discover, if you even suspect having TB, what you practically do in your life. And to seek this information, we went to NTP managers and got this information from them.
Thanks, Tamara. One thing, just in doing this work, one of the things that we've experienced is that oftentimes communities' contribution to decentralization of dots, which is about increasing uptake, early case finding, increasing communities' understanding of services, is the safer area that NTPs seem to understand the role of communities significantly. But when you talk about communities being significant contributors to policy formulation, for example, or sitting around the table to decide on how resources need to get allocated or evaluations need to get prioritized, that's when some of the challenges really come up, because then, in our history, it's been that's been more difficult for NTP managers to understand the contributions of communities on that level. So you know, one of the things that I'd like to offer to all of the NTP managers as well as for us is to be clear about how we can contribute to that process as well. You had a question?
My name is Beatrice Stickers from KMCV Tuberculosis Foundation, and my question concerns the Eastern European and Central Asian region, so I would like to address my question to those people. In that region, I think the purpose of the advocacy ought to be pointed as much towards the professionals as to more than perhaps even the politics. I mean, if the professionals are not yet convinced in many countries of, about the DOTS strategy. And I'm sorry, I was kept from, wasn't able to address, to attend the presentation. So if that was already addressed, then please tell me not to. But I would like to ask you specifically how role of civil society is can be most forceful, and then the role of patient groups, how they can most address these professional people to change their ways of thinking about TB treatment.
Thanks, Beatrice. Recognizing also that we only have 5 more minutes left, why don't we respond to Beatrice's question and all of the presenters also use this time to give your closing remarks and thoughts, because her question actually creates a platform around how can communities actually contribute to increasing not just the political awareness, but also the healthcare services' resistance to doing better around TB-HIV.
With regards to Georgia, I wouldn't say that there is a resistance on the part of medical professionals, because I witnessed that they have continuous trainings of medical staff for DOTS spots, and the coverage of DOTS is almost 100% in Georgia, and we have very good results of treatment success also. However, case detection is not as good as it could be by this time. What was the next?
Closing remarks.
Oh, just closing.
Actually, let's answer that question because there was another question, and then we can do the closing remarks.
Okay.
Did anyone else have a response to that question, Samuel?
In our country, for TB patients, DOTS strategy implementation is widely accessed, and MDR TB treatment is not such widely exists. But we plan to create a wide access for MDR TB treatment in the frames of Global Fund supported program. For TB HIV co-infected people, HIV antiretroviral treatment is available thanks to Global Fund and state budget limited resources. That's my answer.
The final question and then quick wrap-up remarks. And keep it short, please, because we have only 1 minute.
Thank you very much. I'm John Frank Mugisha from Uganda. I have a question directed to Pervez and then one to Lillian. First of all, Pervez, I know I am an I believe in patient perspective. But listening to the debates that have been going on, especially when you follow Carlos' discussion, he emphasizes various perspectives. He talks about human rights perspective, health perspective. Is it possible for you to strike a balance between also the provider perspective and the patient perspective? Yesterday we listened to a speech where they said, for instance, that some of the providers have TB, have HIV, 30% of them did not test. there is that kind of need to strike a balance, because if you advocate for only balancing towards the patients, I see a problem, personally, as a researcher and a sociologist. To Lillian, my question is simple. You talked about mama clubs. Those are mainly the women. I'm wondering whether you envisage a situation where there are father clubs, tata clubs. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
A short answer because lack of time. I think this question is very much linked to the question, previous question. And the patient's perspective and healthcare provider's perspective, both are very important. And the focus of the patient's perspective, why is on because they are the end commodity, I will say. They are the end result. And until unless patient did not understand, they will not demand for their rights. And with reference to the healthcare provider's perspective, I will share the experience in my country. In my country, the doctors did not understand what the medicines are, especially for when the childhood TB comes. They did not have prescribed medication. They divide just a medicine, a tablet into four halves and say that, okay, this is yours. So they did not understand what the prescription for the children are. And they did not own this. And the need is always there. And coming to your question, the patient's perspective is very much important for me, because until and unless patient did not understand what the realities are, they cannot advocate, they cannot ask for information. If they know what the disease is, when they go to the doctor, healthcare providers, they can say, they can demand, okay, this is our right, you have to give this, and this. This is the right prescription or not. The lack of information is still there. And until and unless we did not work on the lack of information, we will not get even patient's perspective or even healthcare provider's perspective. But the need is very much there, as Javed said and everybody is saying, the need is there to work together. But the focus, we have to identify our focus, which should be our focus, whether it should be the patient our focus, whether it should be the healthcare providers our focus, whether it should be the community people our focus. So getting together is very important, and the result should be the desired when we go together, work together, and do the same thing. And until and unless we do the same, do not go together, we will not get the desired result.
Thanks, Perez. Lillian?
Thank you very much. Why I mentioned Mama's Club is these are the groups that we've started with to look at issues of TB and TB-HIV. But of course, again, I realize that even globally, we don't have so many men associations. And we are encouraging men to come up with their groups and associations. And I'm happy that in Uganda, we already have one for men who are living with HIV and AIDS. It is called Positive Men's Union. But we call upon everybody, especially the men, to make sure that you come up with your groups, because these are issues. The reason I think why we are having all these challenges is that men are not getting involved. So we need to have men involved, and the way is to have them form groups.
So with really brief closing remarks, because we're already over time, so if you don't have closing remarks, that would be lovely, but if you do have closing remarks, we would want to give the panelists just a second to do it.
Just Carlos. Very short, just very one comment, empowerment, involvement, or engagement of people with TB. And TB-HIV, both are very much needed. And we are focusing, we all are focusing with reference to the patient's perspective. And until and unless they are not involved in policy or program designing, implementation, and monitoring, there will not be the desired result. So need is there to get community and TB patient and TB-HIV patient's perspective, and in collaborating with all kind of ongoing activities, there will be definitely a result.
Thanks for this.
A continuation of this, I would say that no less important is raising awareness of the general population and reaching as wide as possible, because everyone needs to be aware of this problem of TB and HIV and co-infection, of this kind of global problems need to be really discussed at various levels. As
And it should be made as inclusive as possible, starting from schools, youth, and other kinds of population, and just TV and radio and other media is a very good source of it, and they should be widely used. And maybe for advocates, this is a good chance to always remember this, that these kind of things should be included in their projects and their activities.
Thanks, Tamar. Samuel?
TB is a leading killer among HIV-infected people. Therefore, TB-HIV programs must be collaborative. So my message to future activists is to be active, work hard, and make decision makers promises and the voice of affected, infected communities and people who are in need of real actions. Thank you.
Thanks, Carlos.
Just a few words about, once again, diversity. I agree that we disagreed, so we can debate many, many other things. But the point is we have a lot of common things, a lot of common issues in the HIV/AIDS situation in the TB. For example, stigma discrimination. So we have to share a lot of our information and to share the table of decision policy-making process. So let's try to put the communities, professionals, policymakers, and, of course, enough funds to be efficient in this fight.
Thanks a lot, Carlos. Lillian?
We thank you so much for all the contributions that you're making at different levels. Of course, we need each other. We need to work together. And the challenge is big, but together we can make a difference. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Lillian. The last plug I wanted to make was this report. It's around resource mobilization, which is another aspect of community contribution to TB. And this one is the documentation of how much research for TB R&D got funded for 2005, and it's less than $400 million globally. So with that, I want to give a round of applause to all our panelists and to all of our participants. Thanks very much for coming on this beautiful Saturday.